drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Documentaries, if done well, can captivate viewers through strong storytelling. They can make you stop, pay attention, and reflect. My guests tonight have created documentaries that do exactly that, and they're being celebrated in the Antenna Documentary Film Festival running until October the 27th in Sydney. Australian director Glenda Hambly is the director and producer of Homeland Story, an intimate portrait of a small and remote Indigenous community in East Arnhem Land. An Italian director, Beniamino Baresi, has created The Disappearance of My Mother. It's a fascinating exploration of the life of his fashion model mother, and they're both my guests in the drawing room. Welcome.
Hello.
Glenda, I'll start with you. Homeland Story follows a community's struggle in northeast Arnhem Land to overcome government policy and remain on their land. Tell me how you came to this story.
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try to keep it short. I started in about 2009. Wanting to make a series called Unexpected Heroes, so ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help others in their lives. That was pitched to SBS and they said no. But this story of Dr. Neville White and the Doyenjhe homeland was one of those stories, and I decided to go on with it. And I asked him what he...
And what was it about his work? For those listeners who are not across
okay.
who he is or what
he went does. He was a genetic anthropologist doing a PhD. He went to this small community called Doyenjhe in 1974. And he's still going there. So there's this lifetime commitment to, he was researching, but he became very emotionally involved and became one of the community. He's a senior custodian in the community. And I thought that was a very admirable thing to have maintained that close contact for all those years. So I was interested in exploring that. But when I asked Neville, would he cooperate in making this documentary? He said, no, he didn't think so. He hates self-promotion. And anyway, he gave me a glimmer of hope because he said, I'll ask the community. And the community said, yes, we'd like to have the documentary made about us because we want our voices heard. We want to tell white people what this community is about.
And so, what is that community about?
It's about staying on their land. So it's their ancestral land, but it's extremely hard to stay in those places which are crucial to their cultural identity because government services aren't there. Schooling is limited. Services are difficult to get. It's a real struggle to maintain their place, and the miners want to come in and mine the land and so forth. So it's an ongoing struggle.
Beniamino, your film is The Disappearance of My Mother. It follows the life of your mother. Tell me about your mother. Who is your mother and why did you want to make this documentary?
So, the film is about my mother, but since the beginning, I didn't want to make a biopic about her. I was kind of rejecting that that approach. So it is a film about her life, but it is mainly a look on her today and her decision to disappear, which is kind of like a political decision with many different meanings that I was very attracted to. She comes from a very special family, kind of wealthy and very cultivated. Her dad was a writer and a journalist, and she kind of detached from her family quite early on. She was quite ill. She had problems with food, and she was kind of put in different almost mental institutions when she was a teenager. And she ended up then becoming a model. She worked in New York for 5 years in the 60s. During, you know, the factory time with some of the best photographers, fashion photographers of the time. And she then, when the work stopped coming her way, she kind of asked herself for the first time, who am I? What do I want to do with myself? She was maybe 27, 28. She returned to Italy. She got kind of involved in the feminist movement and she joined the Communist Party and she started doing different jobs and she ended up trying to write herself, although it wasn't easy to have kind of like a different professional identity after having been a model. She didn't go to school, but she ended up becoming a professor of anthropology in university. And that's kind of where I picked the story up with her last lectures in university. I knew she was going to quit because, you know, she was getting old and she was quite fed up with how the university system worked. And I wanted to film her last lectures. I kind of got more into it and it became more of a personal journey into the decision of my mom of how she wants to spend the last part of her life.
And what was that process like of convincing her to be behind the lens again? Because she had sort of almost a, you know, negative reaction to the lens, didn't she?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was quite invasive and it was quite confrontational. It was quite difficult, but we have a mutual respect as individuals, not just as mother and son. She kind of respects my work and she understood where I was coming from. I mean, for me, I had the idea that my work could help her to look at her experience from a different perspective. And I kind of wanted to revenge her because I had this feeling that she was trapped inside this misconception, like many other women, or maybe most of the women, she's kind of caged inside their look in a way. That's what history allowed women to be. Like, they can appear as something, but they can hardly be seen for something else beyond their look. I mean, this is obviously the destiny of a model, but not only. And I know how much for my mother this was difficult. So I was kind of feeling like, I'm going to show who you really are from a different perspective. I'm going to give you a voice. But I was also aware that this would be a little bit violent because she doesn't enjoy to be in front of the lens. But for me, it was also my way to get a ground, you know, like when you are exposed to such a powerful personality like I was with my mom. But in general, I think we have a responsibility to do something with our heritage and with our past. And she's been such an important part of my life. And I felt the right, you know, a little bit like Alejandro Jodorowsky approach to your roots and your origin. You have to do something with your family. Otherwise, you're going to be crushed by them. And this film was my attempt to find my own ground, you know.
I love the way you put that. I'm Patricia Carvelis, and this is The Drawing Room. My guests tonight are directors Glenda Hambley and Beniamino Baresi, who each have films in the Antenna Documentary Film Festival running in Sydney. Very different pathways you've gone down to kind of get people involved in your documentaries. Glenda, you mentioned this anthropologist, Dr. Neville White. He was a key player in the documentation of the Dundji community over the years. And it's clear from the film that he has a lot of respect for the community. Let's hear a snippet.
Neville White walked the clan lands, mapping them, protecting that knowledge. He recorded our culture, preserving it forever. He is part of this land now, part of its memory, part of our memory.
That's what you wanted to explore, isn't it? Because anthropology has a really difficult history, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but I didn't go into that in the documentary at all, really. It was about the emotional connection between Neville and the community. And one family is featured in the documentary. So from 1974, there are three generations of one family featured. And the elder Dulatarma was very tribal and traditional. He still knew how to make stone tools when Neville went there in 74. They lived a very traditional life. They'd never left their homeland. It was a more or less still nomadic way of life. Many of the other groups had gone into the missions on the coast where it was much easier to get food and so forth, and they'd been encouraged to go. But this group were determined not to. So Dulatarma was really respected amongst people up there because he was so emphatic about staying on his land. And then his son took over when he died, Tom Gunamin, and he and Neville became very close. And now Dulatarma's granddaughter, Joanne Goyala, is a teacher at the school there. So you get this sense of transition from one way of life to adopting, you know, the Western culture, but not being overwhelmed by it. So it really becomes their story, and Neville was the vehicle to tell that story. So there was this kind of balance between it being Neville's story and the community story. But in the end, the community story takes over, I think. But Neville's certainly essential, the essential vehicle, and the close emotional ties between the two is what I wanted to capture.
Beniamino, just like Glenda's, your film explores the different ways of storing memories. Your mother challenged your obsession with storing memories as photographs or film rather than just remembering them. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you prefer to keep hard evidence? I mean, tell me about that sort of struggle between you two and the way that you explore that in the film.
For me, it's a personal approach. It's my taste. I like images. I'm quite visual as a kind of passive viewer as well as a wannabe storyteller, because I mean, this is my first film, but for me, my profession, I'm a director of photography, so that's where I come from. I take photos since I'm a kid, but I also agree with my mom that the weight that photography and images have on our lives currently is a little bit overwhelming. You know, obviously the explosion of social media culture and the way that the young generation are very passively absorbing enormous quantity of images and producing them with absolutely no content or no quality. It's disappointing and it's kind of frustrating, and it's, you know, you lose the meaning to control this stream, and we just, I think it's easy to get lost, it's easy to become too vain, it's easy to confuse reality with images. Like, this, I'm absolutely with my mom. On the other hand, I mean, she was part of that world as a kind of an exploited object, and I mean, and it's this is how it works for maybe nowadays a little bit different. Models think that they are more in control, maybe actually they are not, because they are just, again, sort of, I think, a product of social media society. So I mean, models today are influencers, they have a lot of followers and they seem to be more in control, but if you look at them from outside, they are just a result of, you know, how they should become in order to be successful today. So, I mean, I don't think much has changed. But, I mean, I come from a different perspective. I create images as a way to kind of establish something that could last a little bit longer so that you could kind of go back to it and create a meaning. But, I also understand my mother's point of view. And I think she teaches in her lessons. I mean, she used to teach how to read through images and how to read through any image, also fashion images that are supposedly completely empty, but actually you can read so much into them. But the thing is, most of the people don't have the tools and the desire to go through this depth, and so they just get manipulated. It's kind of complicated, I guess.
So many things are kind of complicated, aren't they? Hey, yeah. Glenda, how do you hope your documentation of this community story and this method of storing the memories might make the viewer stop and reflect about communities like this, about Australia more deeply?
Yeah, well, when I first began, I had never been to a homeland. I didn't really know much about homelands except what had come up in publicity around the intervention in 2007, when John Howard moved in and took control of a lot of communities, arguing that there was dysfunction and sexual abuse and all kinds of abuse and so forth. So I think many people would perhaps even still have that sense that that's what homelands are about, and it's untrue. It was clearly true of some communities, and it's untrue of many, 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 many communities. So I really wanted the Doinji community to show the public, the white community in Australia at large, that these homelands are functional, that they have a very strong purpose, that the people are determined to stay on their land. It's where their identity lies. They want their young people to be part of the Western world, but they also want them to have a strong sense of who they are. Otherwise, they get lost, you know. There is this shifting between the two worlds that captures so many souls in the hubs, the hub towns where people are moved to. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. So that was one thing I really wanted for the doco. But interestingly, the Indigenous co-producer, Damien Goyala, who worked with me over the last 5 years on the production, he's organised for the film to be screened widely in East Arnhem Land, because his hope, this is going to homelands and hubs, small towns, which would never see, people there would never see the film otherwise. So they're screening in 9 different locations, and Damien's argument is that he wants the young people to be encouraged by this film, by the voices of the older women and the elder men in the story. He wants the younger people to be strong and stand up for their land and feel confident about what they've achieved. That's Damien's hope for the film, which I think is a key one as well.
I want to thank you both for coming into the drawing room and talking about your work.
Thank you so much.
Amazing
thank
pieces you. Of work. And
I really want to see your film, by the way. I hope I can catch it.
I want to see yours.
Okay. You want to see each other's, and hopefully some of the listeners want to see them both too. Thank you so much for coming
thank
in.
You.
Glenda Hambly is director and producer of Homeland Story, joining us here in the drawing room. Also, Beniamino Baresi is the director of The Disappearance of My Mother. And if you're in Sydney, you can catch both films at the Antenna Documentary Film Festival, which runs until October the 27th.